Hello and welcome to episode 713 of the official EstablishTheRun.com podcast. My name is Adam Levitan. I am one of the co-founders here at ETR, as always joined by fellow co-founder Evan Silva. And the NFL draft is just 10 short days away. The rumor mill, it is flowing. To help us decipher what's true, what isn't, what NFL teams think of these guys, what teams want, who's actually good, etc., we are joined by a very, very special guest. It is Jordan Reed of ESPN fame. Jordan, how's it going today?
It's good. Thank you guys, as always, for having me. It's a pleasure being here. And the lead up to the draft is always my favorite. It's kind of like the lead up to Christmas Day. Everybody's going to get to unwrap those presents, just like little kids, very soon. So I'm excited.
Exciting for sure. Evan, how's it going today?
It's going great. It's great to have Jordan on. I started following him like maybe 3 or 4 years ago. His rise has been fast and furious and deserved. And I just wanted to ask you about one little anecdote, because I watch your videos and listen to you on podcasts, and you know, obviously read all your tweets and all that. Is it true that Mel Kiper does not own a cell phone?
That is true. Mel Kiper does not own a cell phone. He actually has like 5 landlines in his house. So how it works is, whenever you call Mel, you have to call one of those landlines and he'll eventually call you back after you leave the voicemail. So once he recognizes who it is on the voicemail, obviously you need leave your name and your number, he'll call you back. And depending on how much he likes you or not, that's how quickly he'll call you back. So it's something that I had to get used to, but knowing Mel now is something that is very, very easy, just because he'll call you right back.
Wow. I love that. That's amazing. Okay. On today's show, we're going to ask Jordan as many questions as we can about as many prospects as we can. Before we get into it today, quick reminder that we do continue to post free content such as this to our YouTube feed. It does not hit our audio feed. If you're not subscribed to our YouTube, rectify that now. There's literally no downside other than, of course, the silly clown thumbnail faces. All right, Jordan, let's get into it here. I got to start at the top at the quarterback position. There has been much debate about Jaden Daniels versus Drake May. I guess two questions on Daniels versus May. Who would you take if you were the Washington Commanders? And then also, what do you think the Commanders are going to do there at the number 2 pick?
It's a great question, and that's really the big debate at number 2 overall. Right now, I think it's fair to presume that Caleb Williams is going to be the number 1 overall pick to Chicago, but the draft really starts at that second overall quarterback, or second overall pick, I should say. If it were me, I would take Drake May, but what I think is going to happen is Jaden Daniels. And I'll just break it down like this. Just reading the tea leaves of what Washington has done this offseason, bringing in a ton of veterans like Bobby Wagner and Dante Fowler and all these older guys to really help set the foundation for Washington, I think Dan Quinn really wants to hit the ground running. And I think if he wants to hit the ground running, the better quarterback to do that right now is Jaden Daniels, just because he's more pro-ready. You factor in the tools as a passer and then the mobility, I just think he's more pro ready than what Drake May is right now. Now with Drake May, I think long term he has more upside. And you talk about the tools, the prototypical size, and just the combination of everything that you're getting. Jaden Daniels obviously was way better. He played much better last year. But I think a lot of the flaws that we saw from Drake last year was because he had to do so much heavy lifting in that North Carolina offense. Losing Josh Downs, that was a big problem that they just were never able to recover from. And then also, he was getting adjusted to a new offensive coordinator, his second one in as many seasons, going from Phil Longo, who's at Wisconsin now, to Chip Lindsey. So long-term, I believe Drake May is going to be better. But for Washington's sake and for them wanting to hit the ground running, that's why I think they're going to pick Jaden Daniels.
Talking about hitting the ground running, a lot of the quarterbacks that have come into the league over the last 5 or 6 years that are true dual threats. And Drake May was a dual threat at UNC for sure. I mean, he had more rushing production at UNC than did Josh Allen, to whom he's often compared, at Wyoming. But Jaden Daniels was kind of on a different level, leading the NCAA in yards per carry. And also Jaden Daniels is a little bit older. But those two aspects of Jaden Daniels' profile – being like, you know, a dynamic dual threat and maybe being a little bit advanced, because Drake May is a really young quarterback. Jaden Daniels has a lot more experience, a lot more tape, really. So, you know, going back to Arizona State, I wonder if Washington values those two things as they're trying to make their choice between Drake May and Jaden Daniels?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's another factor that a lot of people seem to be forgetting when you're comparing the two, just because we're talking about somebody that's been essentially a five-year player as opposed to Drake May, who's only been a two-year player. Just imagine if Drake had three more years of college ball. I think he has the ceiling of what we saw from Jaden Daniels a year ago, which was winning the Heisman Trophy. So age definitely is a factor when we're talking about prospects. Now, depending on the position, that's debatable. More so if we're talking about running backs as opposed to quarterbacks and offensive linemen, just because the longevity of those positions is obviously much longer at certain spots. But quarterback, those guys can play well into the late 30s and even early 40s now from what we're seeing from some of these players. So I think the difference in the age and then also the rawness, I should say, with Drake May as far as him not having as many college reps, I think that's something that you also have to factor in. But with Jaden, I think it's going to be really interesting with Washington. And I talked about this during LSU's Pro Day when we were hosting on SEC Network. If I'm Dan Quinn, just putting myself in his shoes, which quarterback have I notoriously have more problems with game planning against? Just trying to put myself in his shoes as far as from a defensive coordinator standpoint, that's really could be a differentiator of how he thinks. Who is a player that has really given me a lot of headaches that could potentially – I have that same type of path in the league as far as giving other people headaches. And I believe that he would think Jaden Daniels would be that guy just because of the rushing factor. And then you bring in the throwing factor of how he's gotten better from a pocket patient standpoint. And then also from a down the field perspective, as far as throwing the ball, I think that could be the tiebreaker for Jaden.
All right, let's go to this whole JJ McCarthy thing. I think maybe some people that don't follow this as closely would not expect JJ McCarthy to go in the top five. He wasn't even jaw dropping at Michigan, et cetera, et cetera. I think the narrative around people who follow this stuff much closer is that if JJ McCarthy had been asked to, in other words, if he was the quarterback at Oregon or USC or who knows where, somewhere with a more throw centric offense, that JJ McCarthy would be just a consensus top five option. Where do you come down on JJ McCarthy and how do you separate what he was asked to do at Michigan versus maybe what he's capable of doing?
So I have JJ. I just finished up my big board this weekend. I have him ranked as my 28th overall player. And I say that because what happens a lot of times with NFL coaches, and we've seen this in years past with plenty of other quarterbacks that didn't have a lot of throwing experience. Trey Lance is one that comes to mind. There's plenty of others that have been a 1 or 2 year starter coming to the NFL. Not saying McCarthy is going to be Lance, but just talking about how inexperienced they are. NFL coaches love what I call the thrill of the unknown. So they feel as if they have the intelligence and they have the secret ingredients to really uncover the next layer of their development, no matter how experienced or inexperienced that quarterback may be. But when you just look at JJ's profile, it's something that NFL coaches salivate over. I mean, 27-1 as a starter. He's won at the highest level that you can think of. He's won a national title. But I think why there's so much intrigue with JJ is just the efficiency that he's shown. He's completed 67% of his passes on third down, 76% off of play action, which are things that do translate to the next level. And then you talk about those heightened moments of where he's really stepped up to the occasion. And I think there's a lot of lack of context when we're evaluating JJ, just because a lot of people bring up the Penn State game. And you have to remember, they had an interim head coach. And just putting myself in Sharon Moore's shoes, I'm going to do whatever it takes to win until Jim Harbaugh comes back. That doesn't matter if it's winning games 2-0, 3-0, whatever. I'm going to do whatever it takes to win those games until Jim Harbaugh comes back. So that's why you see them only having, I believe it was one passing attempt in the Penn State game, and them really not putting the game in the hands of JJ, just because they had a proven recipe of success with running the football. But when JJ was asked to throw the ball, he was efficient with doing those. Now, my big question for JJ and what gives me pause is, can JJ ever turn into a quarterback that you win with? I believe you can win with JJ, but when we're talking about taking quarterbacks inside the top five or the top 10, I want a guy you can win because of. And I think that's the big question. Whoever drafts JJ, and if you're comfortable with drafting JJ, can he go from a quarterback that you win with to a quarterback that you win because of?
JJ McCarthy had 713 pass attempts in his college career. Drake May, who Jordan was just talking about how he was not super experienced either. He at least had 952. Caleb Williams had 1,099. Jaden Daniels had 1,438. And J.J. McCarthy also had far fewer rushing attempts than any of those other guys. So I don't know. I Peter Schrager, who's good at doing mock drafts, came out with his mock draft today. He had the Giants trading up to number four to leap ahead of the Chargers, wow, who don't need a quarterback. At one point, Tom Pelissero said that he thought J.J. McCarthy could go number two. This whole time, I've been kind of thinking, like, man, does J.J. McCarthy just have a really good agent who's in the ear of these guys? Because I don't know. He's one of the biggest wild cards, I believe, for draft weekend.
For sure.
Yeah, he is. It's kind of reminiscent of what we saw with Will Levis last year. And if you remember, a lot of people were mocking Will Levis inside the top five and the top 10. And it just didn't come to fruition. Not saying J.J. is going to slip all the way to the top of the second round, but are we, myself included, mocking J.J. much higher than what the league does think of him? That's something that we won't know until April 25th. So I'm looking forward to seeing where he does end up landing.
All right. Let's get to some of his wide receiver stuff. So every year now, Jordan, people, this is the best wide receiver class ever. No. This is the best wide receiver. No. This is the best wide receiver class ever. However, this year really does look like an exceptional class in terms of all-time wide receiver prospects, at least recent memory wide receiver prospects. I'd consider Ja'Marr Chase, Amari Cooper, Julio Jones, and if you go back a little bit further, Calvin Johnson. I would consider those like the best prospects, not what happened in the NFL. I'm talking about the best prospects coming into the draft. Julio, Chase, Cooper, Calvin. How would you compare Marvin Harrison Jr., Neighbors, Adunze to some of the best wide receiver prospects that you've seen? Do you think they're on their level, or are we going too far on this wide receiver prospect stuff?
So I'll start with Marvin. Marvin is actually my top ranked player in the draft, regardless of position. And I think all those names you just listed, I think he's in the same tier as all those guys. And with Marvin, man, like he's everything that you want at the position. He's 6'4", 205 pounds. He has elite hand-eye coordination. Body control is exceptional. Route running is really good. Literally the only hole that you can focus in his resume is yards after the catch. He's just not a great yards after the catch receiver. But outside of that, he checks every single box that you want. But what makes me believe Marvin is an elite prospect is that everybody in the stadium knew where the ball was going to go for Ohio State last year, and that was to number 18. And we all know the quarterback play at Ohio State was subpar last year, and he was still able to put up really big numbers. So that tells me, regardless of my surroundings, this player is still able to put up elite type of production. And I think that type of stuff really translates with Marvin. So when you're talking about Julio Jones, Calvin Johnson, Ja'Marr Chase, Larry Fitzgerald, Amari Cooper, whoever, I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is in that same type of tier. And I would go as far as to say, I think in his rookie year, he could be a top 10 caliber of wide receiver. That's the type of talent that we're talking about with Marvin. But the other two, I think they're really interesting. And this is the tough part from the media side as far as stacking the big board, just because for teams that value like yards after the catch, they're going to have Malik Neighbors number one on their big board. Just because you talk about teams like the Dolphins, the 49ers, the Rams, they're all going to love Malik Neighbors just because he's so electrifying. But for other teams that value those big body possession guys that you can count on in those one-on-one situations, they're going to value Marvin and Odunze much higher just because of the traits that they bring to the table. So I think those other two are really interchangeable, in my opinion. It's just a matter of what you're looking for. But with Marvin, I just think he's in the tier of his own guys.
When we talk about elite prospects, the greatest prospects of all time, people are trying to tell me that Brock Bowers is the greatest tight end prospect of all time. Of course, Kyle Pitts went fourth overall. Hockenson went in the top 10. Ebron went in the top 10. How would you compare Brock Bowers to some of those truly elite tight end prospects that we've seen over the last 5-10 years?
It's really interesting just because we haven't seen Brock in so long. Like, he was banged up throughout the year. And then the pre-draft process, he just has not done anything that's visible to us anyway. So we don't have any testing numbers. We just have to really go off the tape with him. And the tape is really good. But he's much smaller than those other guys, as far as that you mentioned. He's obviously smaller than Pitts. He doesn't weigh as much as Ebron when he was coming out. And then some other guys, you know, like Hockenson, he's not as thick as those guys from like a weight perspective. So with Bowers, he's just so unique of a prospect, but the production is off the charts. All the accolades you can think of, he won during his time. But he's a little bit different in that he's what I like to call an F tight end. So He's not one you're going to use a lot as an inline blocker. That's just not the way that he wins. But if you match up him with nickel corners and those linebackers in the slot or even on the perimeter, I definitely think he can be an elite type of talent. But then you factor in the financial circumstances of it, and everybody's talking about positional value and do I want to pay a tight end this type of money. I'm of the belief that, man, just take the best player on your board. If Brock Bowers is a top 10 player on your board, if I'm the New York Jets or the Denver Broncos or whoever, if you feel as if he's a blue chip type of player, let's just go ahead and add this guy to our roster. So I definitely think he's one of the better players overall in this draft class. But the tricky part is just use him as a receiver. Don't try to put him in line hip to hip with the tackle and try to turn him into George Kittle or somebody like that. That's just not his game. But if you use him strictly as a big wide receiver, you're going to reap the benefits of Brock Bowers.
Yeah, we do a lot of fantasy at Established Runs, primarily what we do. And we don't really, obviously, we don't get fantasy points for blocking, okay? We don't do fantasy points for pancakes, okay? But we want our tight ends to be on the field, you know, at least 70% of the time. Ideally, 90% of the time. I know that Brock Bowers, when he was in there at Georgia, was like almost a 100% player. So, and Todd Monken goes to the NFL, like, you know, he's played in you know, at least a somewhat NFL-style offense. And played at an extremely high clip in terms of play participation volume. But we see a lot of tight ends. Like last year, Dalton Kincaid was a temporary player, you know, a part-time player. He got to be more towards the end, but I mean, he wasn't very consistent from a box score production standpoint because he just wasn't on the field a ton. Is it going to depend on landing spot, or do you think that Brock Bowers can jump in and be a full-time player like he was at Georgia right away in the NFL?
I mean, when we're talking about all these guys, it really boils down to landing spot. And that's what makes this so tricky. I know you guys are fantasy guys, but you always want to go somewhere where they can get a lot of volume, whether it's catches or reps or whatever. You want them on the field as much as possible. That's why I really like the spot with the Jets, just because, you know, not tight end isn't a huge pressing need. But if I compare him with Aaron Rodgers, I think that's a really good fit for him. Garrett Wilson, we know he's going to get a wealth of the touches. Mike Williams, he hasn't been consistent. The durability factor comes in. So he could go in, you know, game five, game six, game seven, whatever, of being their number two target. So that's why I said the Jets would be a really good spot for him. I really like that landing spot for him. But it just boils down to the usage with him, whether it's a team that uses a lot of 11 or 12 personnel, whatever it may be. I'm going to put him on the field as much as possible and use him as a big receiver.
I have two concerns. First, I'm sure you guys saw the picture of Brock Bowers with Gronk. I mean, Brock Bowers looked small compared to Gronk. He was wearing these like khakis that were a little bit too above his knee for my liking. And then he also had these like weird shoes. I mean, he looked like a nerd out there. That's my number one concern on Brock Bowers. Number two concern on Brock Bowers is there is a pretty long history of tight ends not breaking out until their second contract. And if I'm using a top 10 pick on a player, I don't want him to break on his second contract. I just torched top 10 draft capital or top 15 draft capital. So I don't know how sticky that trend is or going to be, but the narrative is that tight end is so hard to learn in the NFL. A lot of these guys don't find themselves until their second contract. And to me, that's a problem if I'm picking Brock Bowers, you know, in the top 10. But
I have a funny Bowers story if you guys want to hear it. So
definitely.
It was his first year that he was there. I actually was at a game live scouting. And, you know, he was having a really good year. And I'm looking for Bowers just so I could get eyes on him. So I'm on the sideline of the game. It's actually 2 years ago. Sorry, they're playing South Carolina. And I'm looking for him. I'm like, man, none of the guys had their jerseys on or anything. This was like 3 hours before the game. So I'm looking for him. I'm like, I asked the strength coach. I said, where is Bowers? And he said, he's standing right beside you. And I had no idea that it was him. So I've always said that
if you thought that was like you thought that I was the towel boy or something.
Yes, I did. I did. And I always said that if we were playing a pickup basketball game and we all were standing in a line and you guys were captains picking teams, he would be one of the very last picks. And that's why everybody seeing the picture of him standing beside Gronk, it brought me back to that memory of seeing him at that game in South Carolina. I never would have guessed that that's how he looked in person.
For sure. All right. I want to go to running back because this is a spot in fantasy where I think day two and day three guys can have outsized impacts. A lot of other positions, you need that draft capital. The talent shines through. At running back, we see day two and day three guys all the time. have a fantasy impact. We glossed over a bit a couple guys that I want to ask you about on previous pods. Braylon Allen just turned 20 years old. And I think I have this right. Just turned 20 years old in January.
Yeah.
In 2021, at 17 years old, Braylon Allen had 186 carries for 1,268 yards and 12 touchdowns at Wisconsin. He also has a pretty good receiving profile later in his career at Wisconsin. First of all, this guy is insanely young, if I'm looking at this correctly. I don't think he's going to go, though, before pick, 90, 100, maybe later than that. Jordan, what do you think about Braylon Allen as a running back sleeper for fantasy people?
Yeah, you ask people in the league about him. Like, he's one of the more polarizing prospects in this draft class, and he's another you have to add a lot of context to just because his first 2 years at Wisconsin, they really were, 21, 22, 23 personnel, smash mouth football. He was a sledgehammer. That's why you saw the production was off the charts. But last year, Phil Longo, who was with Drake May, his first year came over to Wisconsin, and they were more 11, 10, 12 personnel of where they're just trying to run him out of the shotgun. And that's not really his game. So the key for Braylon Allen, and I think there's a path to success for him, he has to go to an offense like what we saw with Derrick Henry in Tennessee, where they just allow him to play smash mouth football. And the team that I would absolutely love that he goes to is the LA Chargers. I can just see Jim Harbaugh in the film room watching this dude just be a smash mouth sledgehammer in 21, 22 personnel, just running it down people's throats. And Harbaugh just absolutely loving that. And we know Jim Harbaugh wants to run the football, but he's seeing this guy that just turned 20 years old. He faced him a couple times, I believe, when he was at Michigan too. So he's very familiar with Braylon Allen. But, third or fourth round, I think that's where he's going to end up going. But the Chargers is one spot I think would be a really, really good spot for Braylon Allen.
Another guy who's polarizing is Audric Estime from Notre Dame. And I think that's primarily due to the fact that he ran 4.71 at the combine. But then he goes to his pro day and runs 4.58 at 222 pounds. Where do you stand on that? Do you what do you think about like that massive disparity in the 40 times between the combine and the pro day?
Yeah, this is the tough part. And he's had like a conflicting resume too. Like the tape is really good with him. Like he had a breakout year last year, really good bodies, really strong, very durable, breaks tackles. And then you look at like all the percentiles that he's in from like an analytical standpoint. He's in the 80th or 90th percentile of every single thing. But then you factor in, I believe, ran 4.72 at the combine, which was really surprising just because he's shown breakaway speed on tape. And I think he ran in the high 4.5s at his pro day, which is probably low 4.6s just because the pro day bump, you're always going to get a couple tenths of a second faster at pro days. But he's one of those things or one of those prospects you kind of have to take him for what he is and really just trust what he showed on tape, which is a guy that's a natural tackle breaker. He's very strong. You can put him in any system. He can be plug and play. He's not going to give you a whole bunch in the passing game, but where his value is going to be is running the football, and he's going to break tackles too. So he's been a little bit of a polarizing prospect just because of do you trust the tape or do you trust the combination of the tape and the analytical background to show that there's a pathway to success for him, and then do you just ignore how poor he performed at the combine? So he's a little bit of a conflicting type of prospect.
All right, I got some deeper running back sleepers I want to run past you. And actually, I want to ask you for your favorite running back sleeper in this draft. Feel free to steal mine. I'm going to butcher these names, but Isaac Garendo out of Louisville, 6 feet. And I know nothing. All I know is 6 feet, 221, ran a 4.33 with a 10.9 broad. I mean, these type of athletics are always, when they go real late, are always going to intrigue me. And the other one is Dylan Laub out of New Hampshire, caught 68 balls in 10 games. I know it's New Hampshire, but he caught 68 balls in 10 games last year. So those were the two running back sleepers for fantasy that came to mind for me. Feel free to steal those or any thoughts on those guys or any other running back sleepers you want to mention.
Yeah, those guys are really interesting, especially Laub, just because the one game that always sticks in my mind is the Central Michigan game. I think he had like 13 catches for over 200 yards in that one. So you're seeing his value. And he's a little bit undersized, but the comp that's always going to be used for him is Danny Woodhead. Like, I got a million texts about Danny Woodhead being his comparison as far as who he could be on the next step, on the next level, but they are very similar as far as from a stylistic standpoint. So I'm with you on Lowe, but two others I'll give you. Rasheen Ali from Marshall is one that has a lot of buzz right now, and he got hurt at the Senior Bowl, unfortunately. So I don't know if he's going to be ready for the regular season, but he's one name to definitely stash. But a deep sleeper that I want to put on your mind, his name is Kamon Vidal from Troy. He's really undersized, but the metrics and the analytics are really good. As far as from the background, he's a really good tackle breaker as well. Really durable in pass protection. He can give you a lot as a pass catcher too. So he's only about 5'7", right at about 180 to 190 pounds. He's really small. But if you're looking for a super late round stash, Kamon Vidal from Troy is one name to keep an eye on.
Very interesting. Speaking of sleepers, you know, Troy Franklin's not a sleeper per se, but a lot of fantasy people are all over Troy Franklin from an analytical perspective to having more value than maybe the NFL season. Now, Troy Franklin's over under for where he's going drafted is around 40 overall. Right now, I think that's probably a fair line for him, but I think there's a lot of people out there that think his analytical profile is worthy of going in round one. What do you think about all the hype around Troy Franklin right now?
Yeah, he's another that's a bit polarizing, and either, you like him or you don't like him. There's really no in between when we're talking about Troy Franklin. The one thing that does worry me about him is just the physical profile, just because when DBs have been able to get their hands on him, he just really hasn't responded to that. And you saw that in both of the Washington games, they really were able to get handsy with him and he wasn't able to adjust. But if you're able to keep him free and keep his frame free, I mean, he has really good flexibility. He has really good hands. And then also he's a good route runner too for his size. So he's one of those conflicting and polarizing type of prospects. Now I have a late second round grade on him right now, so I'm more so taking the over on 40, but it would not surprise me if he ends up going a little bit higher than that.
What about Xavier Worthy?
Yeah, he's another. Either you like him or you love him. I think he's better than what a lot of people are giving him credit for, and that was even before he broke the combine record in the 40. He's not just a speed merchant, Deshaun Jackson type of receiver that just runs down the field. He's actually running real routes on tape. But the big thing about him is that you have to put him in a specific type of role just because he isn't an overly physical type of guy. He's not a player that's going to go up and dominate at the catch point, but he's so good at getting open at all three levels of the field. And he's one of those dudes that I just call a sudden change player. Like, he can flip the scoreboard in an instant. But I have a late first on him right now. And if he goes somewhere, you know, the Chiefs just got Hollywood Brown, but if they even do select him, or even in Buffalo or somewhere like that, somewhere in the late first round, I think he could be a really good fit anywhere.
Do you have a wide receiver sleeper that you want to give to the people? Maybe someone that's going to go day three at wide receiver that you think people should be aware of at the wide receiver position?
Oh, man, where do I start? I'm just sitting here looking at my list now. So I have 13 day two grades on wide receivers. So that just goes to show you how deep this running back class is. But one name I love, man, is Malik Washington of Virginia. He's one that started his career at Northwestern, and the quarterback play obviously was not great there, but last year he had a phenomenal season. And you look at, once again, all the analytical profiles as far as his future projection, they all look really good. And he's another that's a little bit undersized at about 5'9", 190 pounds. But if you want him to be your third receiver, I think he could be a really good starter in the slot for someone. So Malik Washington of Virginia is one name that I would vouch for.
We had Mike Renner, formerly of PFF, on, and he talked up Malik Washington, his favorite sleeper too. And I was listening to Matt Harmon, and he loves Malik Washington too, Matt Harmon of Reception Perception. So we're building a little bit of a consensus that this is a dude that we should definitely keep an eye out as a potential future slot receiver in the NFL.
I saw on your big board, Jordan, I believe you have Jatavion Sanders as your tight end two in this class behind Bowers. This has been all over the place. Actually, there's some markets up right now. People that are into draft pops, who will be the second tight end off the board? Theo Johnson, I think, is an option. Jared Wiley was 20-1 at one point. He's down to like 10-1 now. Cade Stover out of Ohio State is in the mix too. I think there's a lot of opinions on all these guys. Do you still have Jatavion Sanders as your tight end too? And what do you think about these non-Bowers tight ends in this class?
Yeah, I do. I still have him as my second guy, but those others are right on his heels. And I'm not a betting guy, but if I were, one name I would sprinkle some money on is Ben Sinnott of Kansas State. There's a lot of people that like him in the NFL right now. And, you know, texting back and forth with some people that actually work in the league, everybody's saying that, you know, Jatavion Sanders is not going to be the second guy to come off of the board. It's actually going to be Ben Sinnott just because of the versatility that he has. He's kind of a Kyle Juszczyk type of player. But you can use him in so many different ways. And the reason why a lot of people like him so much is that with those other guys, they're either a receiving guy or they're a blocking guy. You really don't get the combination of both. But with Sinnott, I mean, you can line him up hip to hip. You can put him in the backfield. You can line him in the slot. You can put him outside. There's so many different things that you can do with him. And they just really love that versatility that he brings to the table. So do not be surprised if Ben Sinnott is the second tight end to come off of the board.
I like that. Ben Sinnott stood out to me. I have not seen him play yet, but he had a bunch of catches in his final season. And we've noticed that at the tight end position, especially at the tight end position and the running back position, athletic testing is very, very important. And Ben Sinnott tested really, really well. Yeah. So I bet for teams that that tend to use, you know, athletic testing a little bit more, he's gonna grade pretty highly because I mean, he checks a lot of boxes in terms of catch production and athletic measurables.
All right. Last one before we get you out of here, Jordan. I asked Adam Schefter the same thing. I asked him, anyone you think goes higher or lower than common perception right now in this draft? He said he thought A.D. Mitchell would go higher than market consensus right now. Is there anyone you think it's going to go higher or lower than what the public thinks right now in this draft?
Ooh, pick a position. I'll let you guys pick a position.
How about a player?
Yeah.
Where do you think that Brian Thomas is going to go?
The earliest I think he could go, that's a great question. I think the Colts at 15 make a lot of sense, and then also the Jaguars at 17 make a lot of sense. There's a lot of people that like Brian Thomas Jr. I like him a lot as well. He's my fifth receiver behind A.D. Mitchell, but it wouldn't surprise me if he does go before AD, just because of he's another that once you bring up the analytical stuff, he grades out a little bit better. And then the pathway to success as far as what he's doing from a catch perspective, he's doing a little bit more. But there's a lot left to uncover with Brian Thomas Jr. So it wouldn't surprise me if he goes as high as the Colts to 15 or even the Jaguars at 17. I think both of those teams make a lot of sense for him.
What about Michael Penix and Bo Nix? Where do you think those guys are going to go?
Yeah, this is another, man. I went back and forth with both of these guys. I just don't buy the Knicks at 12 stuff. I just think that's way too high for him. I think if Denver does trade back just because they don't have a second-round pick, they could take him at the back end of one or even early two. That wouldn't surprise me with Penix. It just depends on who you ask. Honestly, there's some people that are comfortable with the medicals and the durability questions with him. So I don't think the Raiders would take him at 13, but it wouldn't surprise me if they trade back up into the first round up from 44 to take him. So if I had to guess, I think both of them go early day two. I don't think either goes in the back end of one.
What about running backs you think might go higher or lower? This Jonathan Brooks to Dallas stuff is picking up so much steam. They have the 56th overall pick. Everyone's talking about Dallas taking Jonathan Brooks at 56 overall. I don't even know. Is Jonathan Brooks your number one running back in this class? And do you think there's any running backs that'll go higher or lower than market?
So Trey Benson is actually my top running back, and it would not surprise me if him or Brooks are either the first running back selected. I really like Benson. I like the contact balance. He doesn't fumble the ball. He's really good as a pass catcher. I think there's more potential to him. And then the contact balance. The contact balance is exceptional. He's at the top of the ranks as far as broken tackle percentage, which is something that I think you have to have if you want to be a starter or at least the top end parts of a committee on the next level. Somebody I think could go lower is Blake Corum, just because of you factor in the injury concerns with him. And then there's a lot of tread on those tires as far as, there's a lot of wear and tear on his body throughout his career at Michigan. So I think he's one that could go a little bit later than what a lot of people are expecting right now.
All right. That's not news to Evan's ears. He's been firing on Blake Corum RB1 for the last month. He can't help himself. All right. Appreciate the time, Jordan. Why don't you tell the people where they can find you on social, where they can find your work this draft season? And I guess you're working on the draft 365 days a year. So if you guys are into the draft, be sure you're following Jordan's stuff. Where can they find you, Jordan?
Yeah, so you can find me on X or Twitter or whatever you guys call it or want to call it nowadays at Jordan underscore Reed. That's J-O-R-D-A-N underscore R-E-I-D. Also, you can find my work on ESPN Plus alongside my colleagues, Phil Yates, Mel Kiper Jr., and then also Matt Miller. We have plenty of stuff that is coming out during the lead up to the draft. My big board is actually coming out Wednesday morning. I'll have 400 players on there that I actually graded on it with round grades attached to each one. I'll have a final 7-round mock draft that releases on April 23rd. Be out on the lookout. And for those of you that are psychos, I'll actually be releasing a 2025 mock draft a couple of days once the 7th round of this year's draft does conclude. So for those of you that are trying to get an early jump on some of the skill position guys and then some of the top players in next year's draft, I'll have that out about a week after the draft concludes.
Awesome. 7-round mock. How do you even do a 7-round mock? I mean, I don't even do a 1-round mock. I cannot imagine doing a 7-round mock.
Once you lay out all the players and you just start to stack team needs, it just starts to slide itself. It's much easier than what you really anticipated being. Once you figure out those team needs and where you have guys projected, it's really just slotting team fits after that.
Yeah. Makes sense.
I mean, he does this for a living, Adam. Like, it's, I know. You know.
I know. Exactly. All right. Be sure you're following Jordan. Before you're following Jordan's work, I wake up every morning. I always read what's on ESPN and ESPN Plus with the draft, and highly recommend if you guys want to stay in tune with everything going on. Appreciate the time, Jordan. Be sure you're following him, myself, at Adam Levitan, all one word, at Evan Silva, all one word, on the Twitter machine. For Jordan, for Evan, for producer Ryan, for producer Luke, I am Adam. Good luck, everybody.